we have people on tonight from Toronto, from England, Scotland, Ireland, North, South, West, and East. And I'm very delighted to say we have our next storyteller. I'm going to tell the story. I know we've told it before, but she sent in a few stories to Padraig, and Padraig said, look, these are great stories, but we're doing this event for Pride. So do you have anything that would work for that? She said, I've got a story about a gay bull. So, and you can find that story on our podcast. So we haven't seen her for a while. It is an absolute joy to have her back. So please, a big jazzy hands welcome for the wonderful Louise Nealon.
I have a problem with the term lockdown. We are not locked down. We are locked in. And it's no lock-in in a pub at closing time. We're locked out of them. We are locked into our thoughts and our anxieties. We are locked into our lives. We literally can't get out of them. I'm still living with my parents, and I'm more aware of them than ever. My dad has a problem with learning people's names, so he just calls them whatever he wants. The coronavirus, or COVID-19, is no exception to this rule. Dad has decided to call the virus covert, which would be fine if he didn't include it in every sentence that comes out of his mouth. I've tried to have some frank conversations in order to establish some personal boundaries. He was baffled to learn that the genius and humour evident in funny WhatsApp videos that he shows me is actually lost on me. I don't find them funny. The last thing my mother needs is a pandemic. She is a cautious woman at the best of times. We were the kids dressed like stuffed chickens in July in case we'd catch a cold. She still buys me clothes that are sizes too big for me, insisting that I need the room and I will grow into them. The last time I was locked in with my family was in March 2018, when we were snowed in. My brother's new girlfriend was unexpectedly stuck with my family for a very, very long fortnight. By day 5, she had run out of underwear, and my sister and I spent a good 20 minutes panicking and rummaging around the house to find a decent pair of knickers we could lend her. We are a family short on decent knickers. We have knickers, all right, but not the kind you can freely lend out like a library book. You can't give your brother's new girlfriend a thong. I don't think you can lend anyone a thong. Or a pair of briefs that are a bit frayed, but will do grand for another few months or years, because it's so hard to find a comfy pair of knickers. And you don't mind wearing them, because honestly, who needs to know? My sisters and I silently look at and judge each other's underwear when hanging them on the radiator, but we've made an unspoken pact. Each to their own, we say. Until you get snowed into your house with your brother's new girlfriend who needs a lend of underwear. What you need in that situation is a pair of relatively new, plain briefs, the cotton, comfortable type, with the obvious VPL. The utter relief that came when we found a clean pair of Bridget Jones's knickers at the back of my sister's knicker drawer, we actually cheered. My mum gave out to us for drying our underwear on the radiator in the kitchen, in full view of the farmers that came in for breakfast in the morning. My dad didn't mind. He pointed to a bra drying on the radiator and said, "They're awful handy for taking my bowl of porridge out of the microwave in the morning." When we were snowed in March 2018, we learned that our father uses our bras as oven gloves. 2 years later, some things have changed, while others have stayed the same. My brother's new girlfriend is now my brother's fiancée. My sister moved home from Australia and, along with her husband, has produced the first child of the next generation and therefore the greatest pooping machine to have ever graced the planet. We're asking each other philosophical questions like, what's the worst meal you have to sit through and pretend to enjoy in another person's house? And if you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be? To which my dad replied, here. Obviously. The cow scanner was outside our kitchen window the other morning, watching our underwear dry on the radiator from a socially distanced position. He was saying that asking people to social distance in pubs is the height of each tree. Drunk adults are like children, he said through the window. I go into a pub and I see your dad over there and I'm straight over to him telling him how great he is, or else I'm picking a fight with him. pubs should be the last things to open, he said. They're hardly a necessity. But Dad argued, but it depends on what you mean by necessary. They are necessary for mental health purposes. I turned around from pouring my Cocoa Pops and said, Dad, alcohol is a depressant. Dad waved me away. Ah, yeah, the morning after it is. And maybe for the next fortnight after a good session, but it's fucking worth it. These are surreal times for me, for another reason. I'm a writer. And in January of this year, I finished the first draft of my first novel. I never thought I would finish it. It sounds silly, because for the past 10 years, I've been telling people that I'm working on a novel. I have the arrival of my baby niece, Sophie, to thank for giving me the push to finish my novel. I was watching my sister's belly get bigger, and I was so scared for her that she had a human inside her, and it was going to have to come out. They say writing a book is like having a child. That's the worst analogy I've ever heard. My book has never come near my womb. It's never kicked me from the inside or made me need to pee. I didn't have to push a hardback first edition out of me. No, all I had to do was type on a laptop for a couple of hours a day. So I did, and I finished it, and I surprised myself. 2 months later, at the beginning of my lock-in, I got a phone call to say that my book is going to be published. A contract has been signed and all, but I'm still not sure if it's real life. I'm walking around my house in a daze. Then my brain did something it always does when something good happens in my life. It tries to balance out all of that positivity by letting some anxiety elbow its way into the party and whisper, "It's hardly a masterpiece now, is it?" I have no idea where this negative voice comes from. It's exhausting and frustrating, but the older I get, the more skills that I have to cope with it. I tell myself to cop on now, put on my big girl pants. Something ridiculously, unimaginably wonderful has happened. I promise myself to do my best to stop wondering about what people will make of my book, because it's not my baby. It's just a story. When I give it a name, I didn't have to worry about whether or not kids would bully it in the schoolyard. I don't have to stand by it for 18 years or change its nappies. People can read it and be cruel and say mean things about it, and it won't feel a thing. I know that it won't be perfect, because nothing is perfect. Nothing is perfect, I thought, until the arrival of my baby niece, Sophie. And then I realized how wrong I was. Sophie is perfect. She is the most perfect, laughing, crying, pooping machine.
Brilliant.
Louise, thank you so much. It's an absolute joy to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be back. I take it I have the black box in my family home.
I take it you are in Kildare then?
I am, yeah. Right.
And how many weeks have you been in the lock-in situation?
So this is week 11. So yeah, good car.
Temper's holding up.
Yeah, we're all still standing anyway.
Well, look, we are absolutely, I'm speaking for everybody. We are so delighted about your success. We really are. I just said, so can you see that? It's called Snowflake, is that right?
It all started at 10 by 9.
Well, I hope we're, I'm sure you'll mention this on every opportunity.
100%. Yeah, I already have.
Well, look, you deserve it, and we're so delighted delighted you're here tonight. So thank you very much.
Thanks a million for having me. Great to see you.